yeah, he does. You know, there's some unorthodox things that he does. You know, I mean, it looks like sometimes, you know, he might have a rollout to the left and he'll take off and go to the right. I mean, just, you know, it's just his, the feel that he has for the game. So, yeah, we got to defend 53 yards and a third.
And don't forget about that third. That's Mike Zimmer, the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, talking about defending Kyler Murray. And I had to look it up. I was like, is that the actual width of an NFL football field? 53 and a third yards.
He wouldn't have said it if he didn't know it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I learned something new this morning.
That's good. Why the third? That's fascinating.
A lot of reaction yesterday to Kyler Murray not being named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. Matthew Stafford, who really had a brilliant game in his debut as the LA Rams quarterback, he won the award. His numbers were fantastic, and we talked about it. Was Kyler Murray deserving? Yes. Was Matthew Stafford deserving? Yes. I didn't really have a problem with it, but Kyler Murray is showing some growth, not only in what others are saying about him, but also how he's handling himself as an NFL quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was one of the key storylines and key areas where, hey, if the Cardinals are going to get where they want to go, there needs to be improvement in that area in terms of leadership. And, you know, it's early, but I think we're seeing it from Kyler Murray.
Okay. Yes, I think so too. And I saw Mike Jarecki tweet out yesterday that there was a feeling in the building that Kyler Murray has taken real steps towards maturity and being a leader. And I can tell you from just watching him in his limited press availabilities this year, he looks so much more comfortable. A lot of the interaction with the media was very stilted and weird at times over the first couple of years. There was also a lot of losing that was being done. And I think that there's been a lot of adjustments as far as that goes. I think, I don't think it's been easy for Kyler Murray to kind of assume control of this team. I think we've talked about the dynamic of Larry Fitzgerald very frequently, that as long as Fitz was around, it was very hard for Kyler Murray to walk around and be that guy. So I think it's all coming together for him. I mean, I was watching his press availability, and when he took that shot at Chandler Jones, I laughed out loud.
It was pretty funny. I'm looking for the cut. Do we have that cut, Jared?
Well, sure we do.
I hope we do.
It was all, everything was cut up.
Okay. I don't see it labeled, but
I'll look for it.
Okay.
Okay. And so basically what it was a quarterback taking a good natured shot at Chandler Jones's physique. And I thought, and he did it in a way that was very, that just seemed very relatable for teammates who like each other.
Yeah. Here's that cut from Kyler Murray taking a shot at Chandler Jones.
I expect it on Sunday. You know, he's a really unorthodox guy, you know, doesn't, you know, he takes his shirt off, he doesn't look too good, but he makes plays on Sunday. So he gets out there quarterback. You know, he's one of those dudes, he's real instinctual, and he's an expert at rushing the passer. So I'm glad he's on my team, but he doesn't surprise me with any of that. And then during practice, he tries to take it easy on me. So
yeah, and most of the that is funny.
Isn't that great though?
It is great. And moved on and answered the question about, you know, Chandler Jones in practice. And from all accounts, he's been unblockable in practice too.
Right.
Now, did you see Chandler Jones' response?
It's classic. Called him Baby Yoda.
Yeah. Somebody want to tell Baby Yoda about his new haircut?
Do we have that sound? Play that cut, because
that was a tweet.
Oh, that was a tweet.
Yeah.
Okay, but that to me is that gets me so excited that if Kyler Murray's interacting with his teammates on that level, where they're getting into one another, that's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Yoda is what Chandler Jones dropped in response on Kyler Murray, and even Jared said this when Jared cut up the sound, his little inside sports radio for everybody, when he's cutting up the press conference sound into sound bites, he just noticed that every answer from Kyler Murray was pretty expansive and very, very thorough.
And we've played enough Kyler Murray awkward answers, awkward press conferences in the past where it just felt like he didn't want to be there, where he was perturbed. Now, this is after a week where they dominated, they got a win, and he played great.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he's going to be in better spirits this week than after a loss.
That's a good point.
That's, that's my question. Is this a product of
winning?
Sunday's domination, or is this a true permanent change out
That's
of him?
A great point.
And because when we've criticized Kyler in the past for body language or dealing with the media, it's often been when things weren't going well.
Absolutely. Yeah, but
we'll have to.
That's right.
But if we're talking about comfort and leadership being a growth area for a certain player, not just Kyler Murray, the true leaders are the guys that deal with it both ways. Whether when times are good and when times are bad, the availability is always there. Now, in terms of ownership, that's come up a lot too. And you brought up the Larry Fitzgerald example with Larry Fitzgerald not being part of this roster right now. How much more does that free up Kyler Murray to really take ownership of the offense? Here was Kyler Murray's thoughts on that yesterday.
You know, I know they drafted me for a reason. And then, you know, as far as like this being year three, as far as, you know, like we were just, I was just saying about the progression of, you know, checking stuff, ownership of the offense, all that stuff, that takes time. You know, when they drafted me, I knew what it was. I knew, you know, the direction we were going. But as far as, you know, us getting to the top, you know, top of the mountain of, you know, being as good as we can be, I say, you know, we're on the way to that. You know, I feel like, you know, we're very capable of that. The potential is there. We just got to go out there and do it. But, you know, as far as ownership and taking the reins, I mean, that was from the jump. That was from the start.
And I go back to that rookie season when Kyler Murray, you know, he was the day one starter. Mm-hmm. And all the talk coming out of that first camp was Kyler Murray knows his offense better than anybody else, other than the head coach. But the players on the field, he's a conduit from the coaching staff to the rest of the team to kind of get that across. And now being in year three, and Kyler's right, he has had ownership of the offense from a knowledge standpoint, but it's more than that. It's definitely more than that if you want to become
smiling more often. The grumpy cat isn't as prevalent, but Sarah's right on the money about this. He's going to have to be that guy after losses as well. That's going to be the true test of it all. Mm-hmm. Can you sustain consistent leadership, power of personality through the hard times as well as the good?
Yeah. Anyone can be happy when things are great.
That's
how do
right.
you act when things are not
it's
great?
It's easy to grin when your ship comes in and you've got the stock market beat. Come on,
but the man that's worthwhile is the man who can smile.
When his shorts aren't too tight in the seat.
Okay, Pookie. Kyler Murray, according to Pro Football Reference, week one, against the Blitz, best quarterback rating in the NFL one against the Blitz. 5 of 6 for 74 yards, 2 touchdowns, a rating of 157.6, which is just about perfect. Russell Wilson was second, Joe Burrow third, Jared Goff fourth, Carson Wentz surprisingly fifth.
And Kyler Murray had just 3 phenomenal highlight reel plays in 1 week.
Yeah.
The scramble for the short pass to, was that Rondale Moore?
Rondale Moore.
To Rondale Moore. The touchdown throw to DeAndre Hopkins, which was sensational. Then the backpedaling 55-yard over the helmet catch pass to Christian Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy stuff.
Yep,
and here we go.
Looking forward to seeing game two from Kyler Murray and company. Coming up next, Urban Meyer was in the news yesterday for a question he was asked. We played the audio for you yesterday. It didn't do it justice. The video tells a different story. We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata Mornings.
Unfortunately for you, some rumors came out yesterday connecting you to the USC job. I just want to give you the opportunity to refute it so that you can put it to bed.
No chance. I'm here and committed to try to build an organization.
There's a lot of telling stuff there. We played that audio yesterday. It was Urban Meyer in his weekly press conference as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And with USC firing Clay Helton earlier this week, Urban Meyer's name shoots to the top of the list of candidates. So he was asked about it. We played the audio. He says, there's no chance. We had a little fun with that yesterday, holding that up against the famous quote from Nick Saban in 2006. I don't know how clear I have to be. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. And then he was the Alabama coach. So in reviewing that, the audio again, I think it's pretty telling that the audio from the reporter is much more clear than Urban Meyer, who mumbled his way through it. But then I saw the video of it.
Uh-huh.
You would think Urban Meyer was being interrogated. He looked so uncomfortable. He's looking down when he says there's no chance I'm trying to build a program.
The skepticism is obviously warranted because football coaches, newsflash, lie all the time. It's become indoctrinated into football.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just okay to lie. Because it's bad strategy if you don't. But in the case of this, you're absolutely right. That when you watch the video of it, it's not nearly as convincing, right?
I was alarmed.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy who's handled some tough questions in his life, he looked so uncomfortable.
Well, there has to be an element of truth to those tweets that came out before Clay Helton was fired, that Urban Meyer is already looking for the exit sign. There has to be something to that. And this was predicted. I forget who it was, but somebody very smart said that, look, yeah, all college coaches understand the NFL game is different, but Urban Meyer is not built to lose this frequently. Urban Meyer is not built to have to play Alabama every week and deal with that kind of stuff. And so that was forecast for him. And that was before any of the football. And Trevor Lawrence, to me, looks okay, but doesn't look like that guy to me. And so there has to be something to that. I personally think USC doesn't want any part of Urban Meyer.
You might be right. I mean,
too much money, and you'd have to give up too much control.
They'd win. We talked about
that. They would.
They would win big.
Oh, but Vinny, USC wants to take months. They are going to just bask in this.
Oh, that you read my mind of where I was going next. By doing this in week two, it's not like, you know, Stanford looked terrible in week one.
Mm-hmm.
But they beat USC. It's not like Stanford is the little sisters of the poor. They're a Pac-12 program that's had success quite recently. To lose by two touchdowns, that being the straw that broke the camel's back,
mm-hmm.
This is, in my estimation as well as yours, an opportunity for USC to say, okay, maybe this isn't salvageable this year, but we're going to be talked about all year long.
Exactly.
Because we've got a job opening, and just the rumors and speculation that will follow will pay off.
They are going to gulp, not sip, the amount of agents that contact them with guys who are interested in them. It's going to reaffirm to the people that run USC how special USC is,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to milk it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Here's the beauty. If they wait long enough, Urban Meyer might be fired by Jacksonville and might be available.
I mean, nothing's going to happen now. You're if they go 0-17,
mm-hmm.
Which they look like they were capable of after getting dominated by the worst team in football in week one.
Who could they beat if they couldn't get dominated by that team?
Urban Meyer's not the only one being asked questions about this. Mario Cristobal, the head coach at Oregon, was on the Doug Gottlieb show and was asked about the USC rumors because his name has shown up as a candidate too.
When people mention your name for said job, what would your response be?
My response is go Ducks.
Any chance that you at least have a conversation about it?
Telling you again, go Ducks. I'm not sure why you brought me on this interview. I was talking about the Oregon Ducks and whatnot. Since we go this route, I'll reinforce it again. Go Ducks. And so here I am, buddy.
Certainly much
Love
more
that
convincing
guy,
than
Mario
Urban Meyer.
Cristobal.
Look into your crystal ball. Mario Cristobal. Where do you see yourself?
What is up
in the future? Yeah,
okay.
It's going to be a story.
You're right about this. Mario Cristobal, he's got a better job. I agree with you. Oregon is a better job than USC right now.
Right now it is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not right after Pete Carroll left, but yeah, he left him in sanctions. So I think Oregon's a better job. But it's going to be a storyline all year long.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs Daily. Brought to you by America Roofing, Arizona's number one roofer online at americaroofingco.com. For a free estimate or 10% off any roof repair, that's americaroofingco.com.
Yeah, Diamondbacks, the good news is they don't have to play the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium anymore. 1-9 in that building this year, but That was their last game in Dodger Stadium last night. And trying to avoid the sweep, D-backs fell behind in the second inning. Gavin Lux, which sounds like a made-up name to me.
It really does.
He put the Dodgers on the board.
And the first pitch is hit to right. That'll be a hit. One run will score. Here's another run around third. He'll be held up. 1-0 L.A.
Yeah, so 1-0 at that point. Then to the fourth inning, Diamondbacks strike back. Guy who's been a spark plug, the career minor leaguer, Henry Ramos, gives the D-backs a lead.
The 1-0 pitch, and a line drive, and that's a base hit. He'll score a couple and give the Diamondbacks a lead. Marte and Rojas score, so that stolen base really paid off, and it's 2-1 Arizona on a two-run single by Henry Ramos here in the fourth.
Yeah, but pretty much in this series, anytime the Diamondbacks scored, the Dodgers immediately answered. So in the bottom of the fourth, they get a run on a Cody Bellinger ground out that scored Justin Turner to even things up at 2-2. Then Gavin Lux, he delivered again.
Had a base hit his first time up, drove in a run. He's got a base hit here, drives in a run. 3-2 L.A. Just like that. Four batters into the bottom of the fourth inning. The Dodgers get the lead back 3-2.
In that same inning, though, Henry Ramos made a highlight catch, which was number two on ESPN's top 10 yesterday, preventing more damage.
And a fly ball to left. He got this one. Back on it goes Ramos and leaps. And he caught it. What a catch by Henry Ramos in left field to rob Betts of at least an extra base hit. And saved the Diamondbacks a run. Doesn't get any better than that catch right there by Ramos. What a play out in left field.
Yeah, guy's making his most of playing in the major leagues, definitely. So 3-2 there, but only until the bottom of the fifth when Max Muncy. How many times have we mentioned Max Muncy in D-backs daily during this series? Every single day, homered again.
And he hits one, and they're right. Pretty well struck, and it's going to leave the yard. 34 for Muncy, and it's 4-2 L.A.
Yeah, that made it 4-2. As you heard Greg Schulte say, Christian Walker pulled the D-backs to within a run, 4-3 with a solo homer in the sixth, but then Trey Turner, infield single, scored Matt Beatty, 5-3. That was the final. D-backs get swept again, and they're one loss away, Bick, from 100 on
yeah,
the season.
That's the shame benchmark, right?
Yeah. It was good to have Merrill Kelly back. He didn't pitch particularly well, but he had pitched for the first time in a month. So maybe he can finish strong to the season. That was a highlight as well. But D-backs now on to Houston as this rugged stretch of schedule to end the season continues. Man, it's a rough go against really good teams. There's D-backs Daily coming up next. We'll get you caught up with the Rush Hour reboot. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Welcome back to Bickley and Murata Mornings. We are getting to ArizonaSports.com, the poll question that we read off every single morning. We are looking at the Cardinals and this Vikings matchup in week two of the season. We are asking which position group is most imperative for the Cardinals to beat the Vikings. So which one needs to be the best or the greatest? The running backs, the wide receivers, the defensive line, the secondary, or other?
Yeah, I'm voting defensive line. That's where I'm going.
I'm going to be petty before I answer the question.
Uh-oh. Yes.
Uh-oh. Oh boy, here we go.
Very early, this is one of the first things I noticed this morning at like 4 a.m. The actual first choice is runnings backs. And then I was like, when did Jarrett start doing the poll question? ArizonaSports.com.
Yeah, a couple issues here, but that's okay.
Defensive line, that's my answer too.
Two votes for D-line?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's vote for D-line from the show. And A. 59% of the vote right now going to the defensive line, the group that needs to be the strongest for the Cardinals to beat the Vikings. Secondary gets 25% of the vote. And then we've got single digits for the other three. 6% for wide receivers, 5% for running backs, 5% for other.
All right. There you go. You can vote on it. That's today's Sanderson Ford poll question on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com.
Return of the Red Sea.
I just got to look for the email with the name that I'm supposed
Ooh,
to read.
Dramatic
today.
Pause.
There we
Let's go.
I got caught off guard. I'm sleeping over here, Bick.
I was waiting for after that pause for you to go. After further review, the basket counts.
It is time for our Return of the Red Sea winner, and we are looking for Alan Ladd from Surprise. Alan, you got 10 minutes to give us a call at 602-260-9870 to get your tickets to the Cardinals home opener on Sunday and to qualify for the autographed Kyler Murray jersey. So Alan's got 10 minutes. If he doesn't do that, we'll open up the phone lines to someone else. And if you didn't hear your name right now, you could still win by texting Red Sea to 620-620. And listen for your name in the 1 o'clock hour. But the clock has started for you, Alan Ladd from Surprise. 10 minutes to call 602-260-9870.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American-dreamed Brooklyn Betting.
Yes, like that very deep voice said, it is the Rush Hour Reboot, getting you started on all the biggest stories of the day, getting y'all caught up on your way to work. Let's start with Chandler Jones, the star pass rusher who confirmed to reporters yesterday, yeah, I did ask for a trade during the offseason.
Yeah, I did ask for a trade. I did. If Steve wants to talk about that, he can speak about it or my agent, but that is true.
Okay. Your reaction to this admission, guys?
I want to, he kind of put the onus on Steve Keim to talk about it if he wanted to. Steve Keim's going to be on with Burns and Gambo tomorrow, so I'm sure that'll come up in discussion. Chandler Jones is kind of, it was refreshing to me that that he alluded to it, said, yeah, that's a fact, and it looks like he's ready to move on from that and concentrate on football.
What was interesting to me is that generally when there's a trade request, it's the parties involved move on from it. When it comes up like that, generally there's emotion attached to it, like, yeah, I was mad then, or yeah, I'm still mad now, or
yeah.
to just go, I did. It's very Chandler Jones.
I was going to say, am I imagining it, or was there a little bit of a hair toss attitude there? Like, yeah, I asked, and you saw what I did on Sunday. Imagining that, or is that just...
That's good. I like that.
That's just him.
Yeah, no, I can picture that.
Yeah, I mean, I would, certainly.
Well, right, and then it becomes, like I said, it's a dangerous game because the Cardinals can look at this and go, look, we're already paying him for this year. The issue is what we're paying him going forward. And what do we project him to be worth?
Well, sure, but also, you consider the fact that he admitted he asked for a trade. What team outside of Arizona is, got different thinking on maybe a little trepidation on paying a pass rusher in his 30s?
Well, again, if somebody will pay him, I mean, especially if he is this dominant, and to a larger degree, you have to reward players who perform at historic levels.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't just say, well, you're old.
Where's your credibility then?
The Defensive Player of the Week award is not enough.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that certificate.
And
that
not everybody ages the same way. I mean, literally they do.
Yes.
But
ain't that the truth?
Heard that. Okay, so then what do you guys think is most likely? Chandler Jones gets a new contract during this season. He gets it after the season, or the Cardinals do not award him a new contract.
If you had to start, sit, cut those, how would you do it?
I'd start after the season.
Okay.
Sit during the season.
Yeah.
And cut. Don't give him a new contract.
Because if he plays this well, there's going to be a building pressure. There's already a lot of Cardinal fans who are like, come on, man, what do you pay the man?
Yeah. So he gets his 15 mil for the year, and then we'll see what happens after the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, tonight we've got Thursday Night Football in Washington, D.C., the New York Giants and the Washington football team playing, I guess, technically, what is it, Virginia, where they play?
Landover, Maryland.
Thank you. Okay. Oh, yeah. You would know. Sorry.
A New York team that plays in New Jersey and a D.C. team that plays in Maryland.
That's right. We love that. We love the East Coast. Jordan Ronan, who covers the Giants for ESPN, he says the pressure is on for Daniel Jones tonight.
The pressure is on the Giants quarterback. The pressure is on him to not make the same mistakes he's made throughout his first 2 years that he made again in week one. This is an opportunity for him to show whether he's capable of lifting others around him and being the franchise quarterback the Giants think he is.
All right, what are you guys looking forward to in tonight's game? Anything you're excited to see?
Good sportsmanship. Good clean fun.
Yeah.
A bunch of guys, 22 guys on the field at a time, having a good time together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Washington wins. I mean, there is pressure on Daniel Jones because there's a waning amount of faith in him as a like, not premier, but passable starting quarterback.
Yeah.
The turnovers have just been too much. I know he doesn't have a lot of help around him, but there should be pressure on Daniel Jones.
There's not a lot about this game that does appeal to me, but I do get this sense that it's much more important for the Giants to win this game, even though they're the road team. Mm-hmm. And I say that because the Redskins are starting a very young quarterback, and it's New York, and it's Daniel Jones, and it's, you know, it's... I just think that if the Giants start the season 0-2, you know, just wait for the hot take artist tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Fitting in our last question, something you guys actually have already hit on, Tom Brady marveling on his radio show at all of the young quarterbacks who happen to be taking over the NFL.
Pretty amazing. I don't remember this many young rookie players, even watching yesterday, when I think of even the second-year guys, Tua, Herbert, Burrow, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, Fields played a little bit. Trey Lance played a little bit. Zach Wilson's playing. Mac Jones is playing. That's a lot of young quarterbacks. So
that is a lot of young quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Which first-year or second-year quarterbacks, you don't have to just pick one, are you most excited by, most intrigued by this season?
It's Cincinnati, so it's hard to be really excited. But Joe Burrow coming back from that injury to be that that effective in week one after I think he played three snaps in the preseason. And just his, I don't know, his demeanor, there's something about it. It's a guy I want to watch play football, so I'd put him at the top of my list.
I think Tua Tagovailoa in Miami is fascinating to me because of who he was as a college player, where he was drafted, and how it seems like he's in a real precarious place. The owner wants Deshaun Watson in the worst way. They've got a huge game this weekend with the Bills coming to town. Seeing what happens in Miami and whether or not they're the team that goes in and jumps off the deep end for Deshaun Watson.
Okay. Consider yourself rebooted, as Vince likes to say.
Yes.
There you go.
Which is a great feeling at this time of the morning. I've got to be honest with you. Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Rush Hour Reboot every morning. Coming up next, we'll talk football. Dave Damashek will join us straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata Mornings.
Yeah, Alan Ladd called in right under the buzzer. He got in the 10 minutes, claimed his tickets to the season opener, or the home opener, Sunday, Cardinals and Vikings. We continue on here on the Thursday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings. Time to talk some football with one of our favorites, the first time this season. Dave Damashek joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Dave, how are you, man?
Oh, I'll tell you how I am, because as you know, I'm an empath. I'm over the moon for times two for the two of yous. Wow, well, look at the fancy pants in the luxurious morning slot. Muzzle up, fellas.
Thank you. I don't know if I would describe it as luxurious, but we appreciate the sentiment.
That's great.
Oh, I mean, I know when the alarm goes off at 3:30, it's not feeling luxurious. No. I've been in your shoes myself. I know how that feels. But look where you are. Good for you two.
Thank you so much. We've had a lot of fun talking about early season Cardinals football through 1 week. One of the more convincing wins in week one, beating what people believe is a pretty good team in Tennessee. I mean, what were your impressions on what the Cardinals were able to do in week one, Dave?
Sheesh. That was my reaction.
Yeah.
I don't feel like, and here's what everybody's doing this week is, I don't know where these sort of media creations come from, but suddenly now universally we've settled on the phrase overreaction Monday, or, you know, so everybody this week has overreacted to what we saw in pro football in week one. And I do get it. The only one that I feel like, I think everybody deserves a mulligan. Let's not just keep that to golf, that you get a mulligan. If you're a better, you should get a season long mulligan. One take back. My take back is maybe the Titans aren't going to finish with the number one seed in the AFC, which I thought, which I really did think they were going to get, not because they're the best team, but because they're, the rest of their division is garbage. But still, like you say, a legitimate team. The best news of all, if you're a Cardinals fan, is what your defense did. You know, you know about number one and the weapons all around him and all of that. But if that defense can be even, I mean, you have individual greatness out there at certain spots on the field. If it can be collectively just mediocre, you guys should make the playoffs even in the all-time mighty NFC West this season.
Yeah, that's and the fact that the Cardinals were actually playing physical football was something of a revelation, too, in week one. That was kind of pretty awesome. When you take a look in San Francisco, I'm curious what you think about this, because I heard Jimmy Garoppolo talk about how he's not really crazy about coming off the field and sharing reps and snaps with a rookie quarterback. And I started thinking, yeah, it would be real hard to be the guy on a football team if you can't be the guy all the time. What do you think of that strategy in general and how it might pertain to the 49ers?
I actually, well, first of all, hey, Jimmy, I have an idea so that you don't have to be sad about coming off the field. We don't have to put you on it in the first place. We can just go with the kid. How about that? Would that make you feel better? Would that solve whatever emotional boo-boo you've gotten as a result of this? I think it's actually, you know, listen, it makes all the sense in the world. It's a it's a curveball to NFL defenses to have to try and adjust to week after week if you're going to potentially. I mean, like, the idea that we agree that that Sean Payton and Kyle Shanahan are offensive wizards and all of that, but that we sitting on our couch know better ultimately than they do. I think Taysom Hill is a curveball, even if it was the Hall of Famer Drew Brees coming off the field for him. I personally would like that. I call me the opposite of Jimmy G. I think the greatest spot in sports, if you said pick your position in professional sports, Dave, I would choose, I think, platoon corner outfielder. Like, I only want to take like a couple of ABs a game and sit back. Like, I want to play. I want all the stuff that comes along with it, the fringe benefits of people cheering for me and all of that. But I mean, every day is too much. Like, I want to sit and relax a little bit, you know, about half the time at least. So I don't know what Jimmy G's belly aching about. You know, he gets the same money and takes fewer hits. So, you know, he's foolish, and this gives you guys an edge. See, that gives the Cardinals another edge. My big concern is, though, the upcoming uniform matchups you have. First of all, purple this weekend in your stadium.
Yeah.
Then you're taking the red on the road to play the Jaguars. It's not going to be fun. You guys, the fan base is going to have to endure in the short term some ugly uniform matchups. I hope you guys are ready. It takes 110%.
Yeah.
Everybody pulling together for the team, and that's the bullet you all are going to have to take right now.
Let's face it, Dave, though, the Cardinals, anytime, it doesn't matter who they play, it's 50% of an ugly uniform
that's
matchup
right.
at this
yeah,
point.
That's a good point.
They're way outdated.
Yes, they're something, they seem like a 1998 incarnation. Of course, they had the best. Before they got to Arizona, that's when they were the best. If you guys still want the Valley of the Sun thing going on your shirt sleeves, okay. But, you know, the coolest jerseys of all were when the Cardinals at home would just wear a red jersey. They had nothing on them. They had no stripes or anything.
No, nothing.
It just had a number
cool.
on it. That was
yeah.
it. It was just like a red jersey, and that's it. Like, we don't have time to put stripes on. We're getting ready for football.
Yeah.
You know, like that was cool.
They didn't want to spend for the stripes is what it was back then.
Okay, well, that's also true.
All right.
I'm giving the benefit of the doubt.
I absolutely loved how you trolled Baker Mayfield after he threw that ghastly interception at the end of that game against Kansas City. And I've also noticed that it, for whatever reason, Baker Mayfield and the Browns have become the new fixation for the hot take national sports morning shows, probably because of the pathos of the Cleveland audience. And probably
because he'll respond.
And because, right, exactly. Your thoughts on the Brownies and what you saw?
Well, I mean, I've been saying it for months and months now, and you know, I want to. To me, you guys get it. You know, I'm all about class. That's it. You know, I'm that's the. You saw what happened at the Met Gala. Those were the fashion trailblazers. Damashek is here to be the class trailblazer, and you know, follow my lead. Look, what are you going to do? Argue with reality? It's the Browns' time. This is their moment. Congratulations! Now, I want to get in now, because I don't want it to get lost in mid-February when the ticker tape parade's going on in Cleveland. My voice will get lost. I want it to be heard now. Congratulations, Browns. You did it. You have the smartest front office. You have the best head coach. You have the best roster, best 1-2 punch at running back. You have those fancy receivers with their great catches. And best of all, who's under center at not just football, sports' most important position? The number one draft pick from 2018, the Heisman winner, Bake. And what did Bake tell us before the games kicked off on Sunday? Talk is cheap. Then he goes out, and they have the lead in Arrowhead, which was impressive. Then he throws the game-losing interception. And then it's reported right after the game, he gathers everybody in the locker room together, and then he tells them, like, let's talk about this, and you guys should remember what happened here, because that was a bad loss there. So I'm not clear about the talk. I mean, like, we're all three talking. And whatever. Don't get in Baker's way. This is his time. Let him do things. If you talk, it's cheap. When he talks, solid gold that ends in silver, the Lombardi Trophy. Mazel tov, Baker Mayfield and company. It's your time. It's your world. We're all just living in that.
Dave Damashek, part of the Extra Points podcast, the -3 podcast. And give the Extra Points podcast a listen. I know you just had Mookie Wilson on. Oh. We are loving the heck out of that 30 for 30 documentary on the Mets.
Boy, was that something, right? It somehow translates. It doesn't play as like what it was like to be a Mets fan. It somehow transfers into whatever team you root for, right?
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, that's the experience of being a sports fan.
Yep. Dave, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk again soon.
Can't wait, fellas. Mazel tov again. Go Cardinals.
Mazel tov, buddy. See ya.
Dave Damashek, he joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit coulternissan.com. Coming up, the Cardinals will experience something on Sunday they haven't experienced in a very long time. Bix got more in the Blast next. It's Bickley and Murata, mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.